Welcome to Cryptocurrency News, where you get the news, not financial advice. Today we're talking about Can Government Stop Bitcoin? And this article comes from Quillette.com, written by Alex Gladstein. He starts off and says, since its creation more than 12 years ago, Bitcoin is undefeated. Its price has leaped from $5 to $50 to $500 to $5,000 to now past $50,000. The number of global users has eclipsed 100 million. The system's network security, number of developers, and new applications are at all-time highs. Dozens of companies, including Tesla and Square, have started to add Bitcoin to their corporate treasuries. This worldwide success doesn't mean that people haven't tried to stop Bitcoin. The Digital Money Project has, in fact, survived a variety of attacks, which in some cases threatened its existence. There are two main vectors: network attacks on the software and hardware infrastructure, and legal attacks on Bitcoin users. Before we explore them and consider why they failed, let's start at the beginning. And then the author states, in January 2009, a mysterious coder going by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto launched Bitcoin, an open-source financial network with big ambitions to replace central banking with a decentralized peer-to-peer system with no rulers. It would use a programmable, highly fungible token that would be spent like electronic cash or saved like digital gold. It would be distributed around the world through a set-in-stone money printing schedule to a subset of users who would compete to secure the network with energy and in return get freshly minted Bitcoin. Initially, most were understandably skeptical and very few paid attention. There had been attempts at creating eCash before and all had failed. No one had been able to figure out how to create a decentralized, incorruptible mint or how to grow a system that couldn't be stopped by governments. Now, this is very true. This gets into just the fact, the way that Bitcoin uses cryptology to create the coin, how it has to be basically a communal effort. It deals with the immutability of the blockchain. So there's a lot of different things that went into Bitcoin that had never been brought into any of the earlier attempts at eCash. The author continues and says, but a small community grew around Bitcoin, which promised just that. Led by Satoshi and Hal Finney, this group of iconoclasts discussed, tinkered with, and improved the software in its first year, using their computers to mine 50 worthless Bitcoins every 10 minutes. Now think about that, 50 Bitcoins every 10 minutes. So just think about the amount of wealth that was accrued by these early adapters back in those first days. And Bitcoin now trading, you know, over $50,000. You're talking, what, $2.5 million every 10 minutes. So we can see how billionaires were created almost overnight. It says, eventually, someone decided these virtual tokens were worth enough to accept in return for a real-world good. On May 22, 2010, a developer named Laszlo Hynek paid 10,000 bitcoins for two Papa John's pizzas at an exchange rate of 0.1 cents per bitcoin. No one could have predicted that Laszlo's pizzas order would one day be so costly. Today, this order is worth more than $500 million. So imagine that. Just think one second. $500 million for two pizzas. That's the appreciation that we've seen in Bitcoin over the last 10 years. From a rate of 1.1 cents, a dime for Bitcoin, to $50,000 for a Bitcoin. Just wrap your mind around that for a minute. The author continues, since the early days of PC mining and the Silk Road, Bitcoin has been a global phenomenon. No one knows who Satoshi is, but if their creation was a company, it would be one of the world's top 10 most valuable. Its fan base has grown from a few pseudonyms on cyberpunk message boards, to including the likes of Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Harvard professor Neil Ferguson, Fidelity CEO Abby Johnson, actress Lindsay Lohan, singer Soulja Boy, skateboarder Tony Hawk, and investor Paul Tudor Jones. I'm surprised they left out Max Kaiser there. It has its own Unicode character, and an industry conference held this month focusing on how to add Bitcoin corporate treasuries drew more than 6,000 companies MIT boasts a research center contributing to long-term Bitcoin security. Now, that should give you an idea of the direction that the establishment's moving in. 6,000 companies interested in using Bitcoin possibly as something to put on their balance sheet. MIT dedicating a research center to protect the long-term security of Bitcoin. Bitcoin markets have popped up in virtually every country and major urban area on Earth, with local traders eager to buy Bitcoin in exchange for local currency everywhere from Caracas to Manila to Moscow. Millions of people in Nigeria, Argentina, Iran, Cuba, and beyond are now using Bitcoin to escape their local currency system and opt into something with a better track record as a store of value than the Naira, Bolivia, Real, or Peso. And they can control their Bitcoin with a private key, think password, that they can store on a phone, UBS stick, on paper, or even with memorized word list, and send the currency to family or friends anywhere on Earth in minutes with no permission from any authority required. Now think about that. Even if people are offline, they don't have to have an electronic device or a phone or a computer to own Bitcoin. Because what you're owning is the address. You're owning access to the Bitcoin, which is already locked in to this blockchain. Like we said, it's an immutable system. It's there. It's in the bank. Basically, what you own is a bank account number. And more people are starting to understand that they can use these multi-word passcodes. You could take a passage out of your favorite novel, out of a family story, out of the Bible, and that could be your passcode, something that people could easily remember that would be hard to break. So this is the thing that we're looking at more and more. If you think about people that are fleeing an oppressive regime, think about, you know, when a lot of folks fled Hitler, they tried to get out of the country and they had so much trouble taking their gold or their wealth with them. Well, Bitcoin offers that opportunity. When you stop and think about it, if all they have to have is a passcode, all they have to have is 24 words that they can remember. A 24-word passage out of a famous work of literature, say. And they have that, and they know which one that is. Now, that might not be the most secure way to lock into your Bitcoin, but what I'm saying is it allows people to take the potential of wealth with them wherever they go. And this does seem to be what's happening in places like Nigeria, Venezuela, Iran, and other places right now. Now, the article continues. He says, the mainstream media typically portrays Bitcoin as a penny stock gone wild or a new kind of digital tulip mania, but the reality is Bitcoin is a political project that threatens to fundamentally disrupt the Davos-led economic system, with everyone from Janet Yellen to Christine Lagarde expressing fear about its rise and demanding it be regulated. Well, that is certainly true. Now, the article continues on for quite a ways here, but I just want to finish up with toward the end here. It says, even if a government took control of a majority of the Bitcoin hash rate, this doesn't enable them to change the Bitcoin consensus rules or print more Bitcoin or steal anyone's holding. The worst they could do is use their power to mine versions of Bitcoin, which in the case of BCH or BSV has failed spectacularly. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't consider Bitcoin Cash a failure at all, or burn billions of dollars to a temporarily damaged network. What they're talking about there is a 51% attack. Still pretty unlikely that a single government's going to be able to do that. Because on it says, even if a government did want to risk that much on such an exotic assault, it is unlikely that they would divert the precious fabrication capacity of the world's new semiconductor manufacturers to this very specific purpose. In other words, Bitcoin's getting so big that it's going to be beyond the reach of any single entity, any single government, to launch an attack against the software and the hardware where they affect the hash rate, where they affect the production of Bitcoin. Secondly, they can pass all the laws that they want to pass, but if people are desperate enough to get their wealth out of one country into another, and the only thing they have to do is remember a 24-word password and write that down on a piece of paper, or just memorize it, it's going to be pretty hard. You can write all the laws against that you want to, but as soon as that person escapes under the oppression of said government and gets into a more free place, they're going to be able to redeem the value of that Bitcoin. And suddenly, that 24-word password turns into possibly millions of dollars. It allows the ordinary person to take their wealth out of a country that's oppressing them into a country that's not oppressing them. So yes, governments can write laws that affect the use of Bitcoin. It's being done right now. Governments can require you to keep track of Bitcoin and what's been the and your spending with Bitcoin. And the answer to that's been lots and lots of programs where they will automatically track your Bitcoin for you and just add it onto your tax return. But as rules and regulations from the government become more onerous, they just push cryptocurrency into a place where it turns into a gray market or a black market. And eventually people get tired of dealing in that and the laws become changed. So right now we have a situation where Bitcoin is actually reaching critical mass. It's getting so big, the idea has become so popular that it becomes impossible for a majority of the world's governments to keep that idea from being used. And we see the growth of Bitcoin over the last 10 years, and we have to take a look at this and say, what are the next 10 years left? What kind of fundamental changes will happen because of people democratizing and decentralizing Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general? And this has moved beyond just a simple form of storing wealth or utility of a currency. This has moved on. It's almost taken on the aspirations of a political movement, of a populist movement, where people are allowed to have control over the currency they use. It almost reminds us of the old days when there was a gold standard and there was an accountability to the government. They couldn't make war unless they had the gold or somebody would lend them the gold. And this is what some people think, that we are moving back toward with Bitcoin and accountability demanded of the government, where they're not allowed to create fiat currency. Now, whether this will work out or not remains to be seen. But the fact is, as this author points out on this really quite excellent article from Quillette.com, written by Alex Glenstein, where they ask, can governments stop Bitcoin? And really the conclusion is, no, governments cannot stop Bitcoin. They may be able to impede the use of Bitcoin in certain situations. But eventually, like I say all the time, Bitcoin, like money, is like water. It will find its own level. It will find a way around whatever impediment is put in front of it, because it's such a simple, true idea. That's just my opinion, not financial advice. This has been your cryptocurrency news. Over and out.